If you're following along with the daily Bible reading we're doing this year as a congregation, today we are up to the book of Numbers, chapter 5. Actually, today is chapter 5 and chapter 6. I won't read both chapters. But I think if you're like me, you find it interesting when you go back through and you start reading through the entire Bible and you start realizing that everything that God said is there for a reason. And you're not trying to push something aside, but it's challenging at times when you go through some of these passages because a lot of these stories, they're not the ones we gravitate to naturally. They're not the ones that we usually find encouraging. But they are encouraging because they are God's word and he does have something for us. So today we're looking at Numbers chapter 5, looking at verses 1 through 4. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, command the sons of Israel that they send away from the camp every leper and everyone having a discharge and everyone who is unclean because of a dead person. You shall send away both male and female. You shall send them outside the camp so that they will not defile their camp where I dwell in their midst. The sons of Israel did so and sent them outside the camp just as the Lord had spoken to Moses. Thus the sons of Israel did. Has anybody ever paused and looked at you and looked at you with an intriguing expression? And it's possibly after you did something or said something that they weren't expecting. It was kind of a shocking thing that just took place. And has anybody ever looked at you and simply said these words? You're not right. Show of hands if you've ever been told that, please. Come on, honesty in the room, right? I've been told it about 5 times today. Friday, we have our Bread and Soup Bible study, and that Bible study clan, I call it the Bread and Soup clan because it is quite the clan. It is not your typical Bible study. It's a fun Bible study. We do get into the Bible, yes, but it is very fun, but I can't tell you how many times on Fridays I'm told, you're not right. Because we have a lot of fun. I'm not going to go into all the details, but I was locked out of the room this time before it even started this time. You know, yes, the person who did it is applauding back there. She's very proud of herself there. But anyway, a lot of times, you know, people look at us after something like that and they say, you're not right. Well, the truth in that is, whether you like it or not, you're not. I'm just going to tell you that right now. That goes for all of you. You're not right. And I don't mean that as an insult. Please don't get offended. But you're not. And the reason you're not is because nothing is. Did you know that? Think about that. Think about it for a moment, because when we get into passages like this, and you get into passages of what God is trying to do, when he's telling Moses, this is what I want you to do. These are the instructions I want you to give to them. And the issue here was the idea of leprosy, the disease of leprosy and how it was contagious and it would spread. And so God is telling them, anybody who has this needs to be outside the camp. Anybody who touched somebody who's dead needs to be outside the camp. Why? Because we don't want this to spread. And he sends them outside the camp. Now, why is he doing? What is the issue that God is having? Well, the issue is, it's very simple. Things aren't right. The reason that God is even having them follow these instructions of sending people outside the camp is because things simply aren't the way God created them to be at this point. Things aren't right from the fall of man, because I guarantee you in the Garden of Eden before the fall, they were not concerned with leprosy. They were not concerned with disease. It didn't even cross their mind. That's what God designed them for. That's what God created them for. But now you get into a Numbers where God has to handle all this stuff now, and the reason he's given these instructions, the reason he's given these commandments to follow, which seems so ridiculous and seems so overly detailed, is because things just simply aren't right. And if you continue on in this, in these two chapters, as you read these two chapters, especially after he talks about this, then he gets into the issue of adultery, and which was obviously very prevalent at the time. And there's a lot of issues of what the husband was supposed to do, what the wife was supposed to do, how they were supposed to handle the whole thing. If it's even just the idea that it could have possibly happened, what they are supposed to follow and the steps they are to follow, and then they're supposed to follow this divine method of figuring out whether somebody is guilty or not. And again, you look at this passage and say, why is that there? That seems ridiculous. Why would they have to go through that? Because things aren't right. They're just simply not right. God had to do something to make them right. Then we move into the following chapter, in chapter 6, where it lists the Nazarite vow. And the whole idea of the Nazarite vow is somebody that is to be separate. That's the term itself. Nazar in the Hebrew, it actually means somebody who is completely separate. And if anybody's taking this vow, this is what you have to do in order to be a Nazarite on behalf of God. You have to be separate, separate from the sin. You can't do this, you can't do that. You can't do this, you can't do that. And they list every single thing that a Nazarite is not supposed to do, including a Nazarite was not allowed to cut their hair. Now, that's an amazing thought for me because, you know, back when I had my long hair, and some of you seen pictures, you know how many comments I got about the fact that I wasn't a Christian because I had long hair? People assume different things. I remember my very first revival that I went to preach as an evangelist. I didn't have my hair cut yet. I came out of college, and there it was, and a friend of mine takes me over to his friend who was people that weren't part of the church. They were a bunch of bikers, and they go over, and he introduces me as the evangelist, and the guy just looks at me so puzzled, and he goes, "You're a preacher?" It's like, "Yeah, that's me." But isn't it amazing how culture dictates things like that, you know? Because back then, what was the whole, hey, you want to be separate from God? You got to let your hair grow, right? Then we go through the time where you can't. That means you're not holy if you do let your hair grow. So we got the opposite. Same thing happened with ties, you know? For many years, it was horrible for a minister to wear a tie. Way back when, it was considered worldly, especially if you wore a red tie. Then we went through a season where every pastor had to have a tie. If he didn't have a tie, he wasn't holy. And thank God those days are over. Now we're back to this. It's amazing how culture does those things, isn't it? And we draw conclusions over certain things. But anyway, the whole idea of the Nazarite vow was to be separate. Why does somebody have to be separate? Because they were surrounded by sin. Sin was everywhere. Everywhere they looked, there was sin. There was sin. There was disease. There was just constant defilement everywhere they looked. And that is not the world that God created. That isn't the world that God designed. That wasn't what God's hope was, that the world would be that way. So then, because of all this mess, God starts giving these instructions and starts talking about, hey, send them outside the camp. Hey, if there's even the suspicion of adultery, this is how you handle it. Hey, if you want to speak on my behalf as a Nazarite, to take the Nazarite vow, you just can't be just anybody. You're going to have to follow this, this, and this. And so God had this whole thing, this whole issue of, we got to do something. Because God couldn't just let this go, right? He couldn't just let this go. He couldn't just say that it was no big deal that Eve took the fruit. I mean, he couldn't just say it's no issue, that you're surrounded by sin. God could have easily just said, he could have said, hey guys, go ahead, do what you want, live it up. If you're reading through this time, we're reading back in Exodus, remember when Moses was up there, and they're like, well, he's been up there for a while, so obviously God doesn't care about us, so let's just do what we want. And we'll make our own God, and we'll worship our own God. Talk about impatience. My goodness, God just delivered you out of slavery. But man, he's up there. He's been up there for a few weeks now, so we better. Let's just go ahead, turn our back on God. Now we just do whatever we want. We make a gold calf. We worship the calf. We do whatever we want. Whatever our impulse tells us to do, we do. We don't even care what God has to say. And what's amazing about that is, wouldn't it have been something if God would have just said, hey, you know what? I understand. It has been a while. And, you know, I know your patience is waning, and I understand you have temptation and impulses, and you know, it's okay. So just go ahead. Just go ahead and do it. Just live it up and just be the people that you want to, that you desire to be. Just live on impulse and nothing else. But God didn't do that. God saw the need, and he commanded Moses, and he said, why are they doing this? Why have they turned their back on me? And so for all the way through the Old Testament, it's man trying to alleviate this issue of sin. They're surrounded by it, and they can't get rid of it. So God's constantly giving them instructions how to separate themselves from sin and all the corruption. Now, I would suggest today, number one, I would suggest, and I'll get this to a little bit later, but we don't live in the same time, we don't live in the same culture, so we don't have to follow the exact same verbatim instructions that he's giving here. And many of you, if you read through Leviticus, and if you read through Numbers, many of you would say, thank God we don't have to follow all those specific instructions. Just the fact of what I would have to do in order to be able to come here to speak to you would be a lot of stuff that I would have to do that I normally don't go through in order to do so. We don't have to do that anymore. So there's a lot of differences because of Christ coming and because we're not under law anymore, but we are under grace. So we do have a lot of differences when we look at this. But when we look down through this, we see this need. And I would suggest that even though we're not living in the same time, and we don't really have to follow the same solutions, I would suggest we're experiencing the same problem. Not the same time, not the same solutions, but we're experiencing the same problem. Why? Things aren't right. Are they? I mean, I would challenge any atheist, anybody who doesn't even believe in God, would have to agree, things aren't right. Just look around. You don't have to look far till you find out that this world's messed up. People are messed up. Organizations are messed up. Everything's messed up. And how many of you have ever been let down by somebody? Yeah. Honesty, go on. Yeah, you've been let down, right? You were expecting this, but then boom, they didn't turn out to be what you thought, right? Whether it was an organization, whether it was your employer, whether it was a coworker, a member of your family, a neighbor, or whoever, you've been let down. Why does that happen? And how many times do people say, God, why do we have wars? Why do we have poverty? Why do we have kids starving? Why do we have, because things aren't right. That's why. If you took sin out of the world, everything would all go together correctly the way it's supposed to be. But right now, things aren't right. If we look at this specifically, and last week we spent a lot of time on this, and I just want to review it, is the idea that, you know, Christ came, yes, and he's the ultimate sacrifice, as Hebrews tells us. Hebrews chapter 1 explains to us very clearly that in the past, God spoke to us through the forefathers in various times and in various ways, but now he speaks to us by his Son. We are no longer under law, we are under grace with Christ, and the Apostle Paul makes that very clear. And so the ultimate sacrifice, he was the ultimate sacrifice. It was death on the cross, his victory over death, as we sang about earlier, so that we could have relationship with God. And that's when we say, thank God that I don't have to face the punishment for my sin. That's when we say, thank God it wasn't up to me. Could you imagine if this whole thing would have been up to you? It would have been a mess, right? I even just asked for my friends in college one day. Believe it or not, I was very sarcastic when I was in college. Believe it or not, more sarcastic than I am now. I've grown out of it over the years, but I was so sarcastic. One of my friends one time said, Chad, if you weren't a Christian, your mouth would be very dangerous. But there was one time I just sat there at the table We were eating in the cafeteria, just eating lunch, and I just decided to be my normal self. And I said, could you guys imagine what it would be like if I was God? Everybody pretty much just dropped their forks. And my one friend spoke up and said, I think we'd be pretty screwed up. And I couldn't help myself, and I responded, and I said, well, I know where you'll soon spend eternity. But think about, if I was God, it would be a mess, right? Ask my family. They'll tell me. If I was God, it would be a disaster. And whether you like it or not, if you were God, it would be a mess as well. Right? If any of us were God, making all the decisions, calling all the shots, it would be a mess. We aren't able to do what Christ did. Christ all offered the ultimate sacrifice. Christ was the one who did what we couldn't do, and we say, thank God. But the problem with that is that we can take that to the extreme, and there's always extremes, there's always a balance, and we forget about other things that Paul talked about. Because Paul did talk about, yes, we are saved by grace and not by the law. But look at what he says here in Romans chapter 6. What shall we say then? Are we to continue in sin so that grace may increase? Now think about that question. What he's asking is, okay, so we get grace. We're not under the law anymore. We're not under Leviticus, not under Numbers anymore. Christ is the ultimate sacrifice. He did this. And so Paul says, so what shall we say? Because of that, does that mean that we should just continue to sin? Does that mean it's no big deal, we just do what we want, our impulse, and we just act upon our wishes and just fulfill our own desires, and it doesn't matter anymore, all because of the cross? I've even heard it said before, you probably have too, where some theologically have believed that there's even a cartoon that came out with it as a comic strip, that somebody here is here, they're in an willful act of sin in the moment, and they're holding the cross up. So the cross is kind of their license to go ahead and sin. Now, those of you who know me personally know that lately the word license has been on my mind. Recently, and it's really interesting to think about what that happens. Now, going back to the honesty question, and this is another one, and I'm going to ask for a show of hands here because I trust you, and I believe you're going to be honest with me, because, you know, if you're a new hoper and you walk through these doors, you're going to be honest with me. You're not going to keep this from me. Has anyone here ever been pulled over? Multiple? Did I hear somebody say multiple? It's not a fun experience, is it, right? I was just pulled over recently for the light, and that even wasn't a fun experience. No matter what, it's not a fun experience when you see that behind you, right? But I remember the one time I was in my very first church, and I was driving, and Miranda can tell you, everybody can tell you that you have good drivers, and then you have me. That's pretty much the way it is. My instincts aren't good. I'm too much of a processor, too much of a thinker. I'm not much of a reactor. So it's not a good situation when I'm behind the wheel, which is a good thing. We have more drivers in the house now. It's not a good thing, because, a processor in an emergency situation, should I turn, should I not turn? Should I hit the brakes, should I not? Maybe I shouldn't hit the brakes. Is it? And then before you know it, it's over and it's too late and you're not. See, so it's not good. But anyway, I was a young minister and I was driving through town, and there was this traffic light that it just changed, and I tell you, it just changed right when I was almost under. You ever been there? It was kind of orange. Yeah, the light was orange. It wasn't red. It wasn't green. It wasn't yellow. It was just yeah. And so I went through, and of course, after I went through, you do one of these. You look at the mirrors, and sure enough, doo, 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 comes up. Asked me all the typical questions. He got to the occupation question. Occupation? Minister? What was that? I'm a minister? I'm a pastor, okay? And then you get it. But do you know what's funny is every single time that I've been put, yes, there's been more than once, and it's not fun, but every single time that this has happened, you give them the license, right? And I think there's only been one time where they have come back and said, here you go, just be careful next time. And you're like, whew. Versus those times when you get the ticket and they say, well, it's only going to be this much money per mile over the speed limit. Oh, well, this is only going to be $12. And they come up and they go, but it's the court costs that kill you. And they give that to you, and the court costs like $175. Right? And you see all of this hits you there, right? So there's only been one time where they've said, you know, hey, go ahead, you're good. I mean, I don't want anybody to get concerned. I have a good driving record. It hasn't been 25 times or anything like that. But at the same time, it's just funny that, yes, you have a license to drive, yes. And when you're pulled over, you did something wrong, you give them the license, but did you know that license does not get you out of what you did wrong? You still did it wrong, and you're still responsible, and you still have to pay the fine. You did it. Yeah, but this is my license. This is my picture. I mean, I went through all that training and driving, we get that. But yeah, that means you can drive, but it doesn't give you a license just to do whatever you want on the road. Thank God it doesn't. It's the same thing with our spiritual life. Yes, he's the ultimate sacrifice. And yes, but don't treat the cross as a license. Well, then that means I can do whatever I... That's what Paul's addressing here in chapter 6. Because look at what he says in chapter 6. He says, what shall we say then? Are we to continue in sin so that grace may increase? Far from it. How shall we who died to sin still live in it? Or do you not know that all of us who have been baptized into Christ Jesus have been baptized into his death? Therefore, we have been buried with him through baptism into death, so that just as Christ was raised from the dead through the glory of the Father, so we too may walk in newness of life. For we have become united with him in the likeness of his death. Certainly, we shall also be in the likeness of his resurrection. Knowing this, that our old self was crucified with him in order that our body of sin might be done away with, so that we would no longer be slaves to sin. For the one who has died is freed from sin. Now, if we have died with Christ, we believe that we shall also live with him. Knowing that Christ, having been raised from the dead, is never to die again, death no longer is master over him. For the death that he died to sin once for all time. But the life that he lives to God. So you too, consider yourselves dead to sin, but alive to God in Christ Jesus. Verse 12, therefore, sin is not to reign in your mortal body so that you obey its lusts. And do not go on presenting the parts of your body to sin as instruments of unrighteousness, but present yourselves to God as those who are alive from the dead, and your bodies as instruments of righteousness for God. For sin shall not be master over you, for you are not under the law, but under grace. You begin to think about what he's saying there. And he's using that same term, the idea of law and grace, and how sin is no longer a master over you. The bottom line of what he's saying, and he said something similar in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 13. In 1 Corinthians 10, 13, he says, no temptation has seized you except what is common to man. And God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. But when you are tempted, he will also provide a way out so that you can stand up under. You know what that means? There's a lot of talk in the world today, in our culture today, because as I said, things just aren't right. But the bottom line that what I'm hearing in our culture right now is just this whole idea of, well, you can't expect. You can't expect them to live. I mean, after all, they're teenagers. I mean, come on. I mean, you were a teenager too. I mean, you had temptations and lusts and all that. I mean, you can't expect them to. And you can't expect them to, I mean, come on, after all, they're surrounded by the pressure at work and everything else. And see, so, because what I'm hearing in our culture right now, all over the place about everything is, hey, you have a right to fulfill your desires. You have a right to fulfill your impulses. You have a right to just do whatever you want. And nobody needs to watch over you for that, because you have a right to do it. So you don't need any guidance. You don't need any God. You don't need anything else. You can just do whatever you want in your life, and it's okay. You can do whatever you desire, whatever comes, whatever in the moment, whatever your impulse is, go ahead. You're covered. You're good. We understand. You know how sad that is? Because you know what we're teaching people? You know what we're teaching teens? You know what we're teaching people when we're teaching them that? We're teaching them that you're no different than the dogs. Why? What does a dog do? A dog acts on impulse and instinct. You ever fed a dog? Right? You ever tried to keep a dog from the food it wasn't supposed to have? I've always found it interesting how dogs will just, I mean, literally, they'll sacrifice everything just to get a nibble of what we eat. That tells you that they're not really pleased with what they get. Because they'll do everything to get anything of what we eat, dropping it on the floor or whatever. I mean, it can't even be fast enough. Our dog recently, we had to give her some medication, and we had to go through many things to get those pills in her mouth and swallowed. And she got to the point where she expected it. We had to get the best stuff, I mean, and surround it. And you know how many times we would surround it with all this good stuff, good meat or whatever, and then she'd be done and go away. We look, and there's the pills right there. She licked the pills off, and that's it, right? Because, you know, I tried to sit down and explain to her, you know, you need to take these. You know, I know that you don't like swallowing these pills, but you need to take them because it's important for your health. And she didn't listen. She just continues to do whatever she wants. Isn't it sad that even as a culture, we've gotten to the day where we're teaching people that's pretty much who we are? You can't help yourself. Just go by impulse. Just go by instinct. It's okay. But what Paul is saying here is what he said in 1 Corinthians to the church at Corinth. And there, by the way, the church at Corinth was experiencing major issues that he was writing to them about, saying, why are you living this way? Why do you act as if this is okay? Why are you acting as if the sin you're involved in is okay? And then the same thing here. He says, so yes, he died, sacrifice, it's all by grace, but should we go on sinning? No. You see, as we're following Jesus, at the very least, because I'm not going to get into the theological, I know there's always a theological debate. Well, don't we sin every day, or is it a sin, or is it a mistake, and we always get into that. I'm not going to waste time getting into that. But I will say this, that as a follower of Jesus, at the very least, you must at least have a desire to say, Jesus, I want my entire life, everything I do, to be pleasing you. Yeah, but Chad, you know I'm not going to. Well, let's not even go there. Let's not even say that. I don't even want to have that discussion. Right now, in this moment, at the very least, Jesus, I want everything I do and say to be pleasing to you. Because that's basically what Christianity is. That's basically what following Jesus is. Following Jesus doesn't give a license for us to do whatever we want. Following Jesus is, Jesus, I want to live my life pleasing to you. Jesus, I want my life to be pleasing to you. I want to live it according to what you say. I want to be what you want to be, what you want me to be. It's no longer about me. It's about you. Whatever you desire, God, whatever you don't like in my life, take it out. Whatever you do like, put it in. Wherever you want me to go, I'll go. Whatever you want me to say, I'll say. Whatever you want me to do, I'll do. It's all yours, God. It's all yours. It doesn't matter. Whatever. You can ask me to be a missionary, and I'll be in Africa in the hottest part, and I'll go. You can ask me to go teach in a public school, and I'll go. You can ask me this, I'll go. Whatever, God, it's all you. It's yours now. It's no longer mine, and I can no longer just do whatever I want and hold the cross up and say, yeah, I'm covered. Now this even belongs to you, and now this, and this, and this, and this, and this, and this, and this. And before you know it, you find out that when you're serving Christ, he is involved in every area, and he wants to be Lord of every single thing you do. I think the greatest message that Paul has, because by the way, you look at the life of Paul and you see somebody who exemplified this, you see an example of somebody who did that. The greatest message that we could say to our children, to our youth, to the adults, to grandparents, to every age group that is out there, the greatest message we could say is, you don't have to. Don't listen to how everybody else is saying, yeah, you have to, you don't have a choice, you have to give in, everybody gives in, it's okay, you know, we understand. No. You don't have to live the way everybody else is living. You can actually be empowered by Christ to live the way he desires. That's not bad news. That's good news. And it's good news in the middle of a culture and world that just isn't right. And it's good news in the midst of a life that all of us have that just isn't right. We need God. We need him to come in, and we need for him to empower us to live the way he has called us to live. Lord Jesus, we ask today that your word would speak to our hearts exactly what it is that we need to hear. And we ask today, Jesus, we may need to say, forgive us, may need to say, forgive me, for the times I've used your cross as a license to do whatever Chad wanted, instead of looking at Jesus and saying, Jesus, I want to be what you want me to be. Jesus, search my heart and my soul. May I be the person that you want me to be. Right now in this moment, Lord, I ask that you would anoint your word as it has gone forth, and that you would speak to each of us who are here and each of those who are watching live stream and those who are watching the video later. We ask God today that you would be faithful to search our hearts with us this morning. And if there's any wicked or offensive way in us, that you would point it out, Jesus. You would point it out and you would say, this needs to change. And Lord, when you do that, as uncomfortable as it might be, that our response would not be to cover it up, our response would not be to look the other way, but our response would be, yes, Jesus. And Jesus, can you give me the strength? Because Lord, I agree with you. I don't want that in my life. I don't want to live like that. I don't want to have that desire. I don't want to be a slave to this anymore. And as you do that, Jesus, I pray that each of us would be willing to surrender all to you and to say, God, show me. How I can be what you want me to be, and may I never give up in being what you want me to be. I ask all these things in your name, the name of Jesus.